Read, before I get started with the message, I have a new book you need to read to you from. This one is called Inspired Evidence, Only One Reality. And this kind of goes through the year. And it's by Julie Von Vett, V-E-T-T, and Bruce Malone. And they do kind of a yearly thing. As well, I'm not yearly, excuse me, daily kind of devotion. And so I want to share with this with our kids before, and that's all, before I start the message. And I like this one because it has to do with penguins. Have you ever considered the penguin? It is a bird, but it cannot fly. Why not? The penguin dives for fish in the oceans. This bird does not have hollow, light bones, but solid, heavy bones with wings that act like paddles. So the penguin is equipped to swim. But that is a bird. To swim and dive in the oceans with hollow bones would be like wearing a life jacket while diving to the bottom of a pool. Very difficult, if not impossible. So the great creator gave the penguin solid, heavy bones, which enable him to dive deep into the ocean and to catch fish. Now here's the thing. There is no known link between penguin wings and bird wings. After all, how do you slowly change and intricately reinforce light, hollow bone structure into heavy, solid bone? How do you slowly transform a wing meant for flying into a wing perfectly designed for swimming? No transitions are known, and they are even hard to envision. Penguins also sport a fancy tuxedo. This tuxedo allows the swimming penguin to disappear in a flash when a predator spies him, you know, like killer whale, leopard seals, fur seals, sea lions, sharks, and killer whale are the main threats for penguins in water. When a penguin swims, the black side of its tuxedo is up. If a predator is swimming above the penguin and looks down, the black penguin tuxedo blends in with the blackness of the ocean. If the predator is swimming below the penguin and looks up, the white part of the penguin tuxedo blends in with the light surface of the ocean, again making it difficult for the predator to spot the penguin. Isn't that something? So if the predator is swimming below the penguin, he sees white. It blends in with the light surface of the ocean. How did that happen? Did it all come about by chance? I don't think so. God has designed the penguin for successful living in the water. When you see design and purpose, you know it didn't happen by chance. There's a designer. And that designer is God. Good little lesson there for us, I think. Well, this morning, in the time we have, let's turn our attention to Mark. It's still now early summer of 28 A.D., in the first year of our Lord's ministry. And we have in our text this morning three incidents where Jesus, quite simply, and one might say even amazingly, turns things inside out for certain people. Especially as far as the religious leaders of the day were concerned. That is, the scribes of the Pharisees. Because you see, and this relates to today as well, brothers and sisters, because you see, They believed that they had everything all figured out. They believed they had everything all figured out already when it came to how to live, to how to conduct oneself around other people, socially, culturally. But I might add, above all, they believed that they had figured it out, how God had done everything, and how He does things, how He did things. They believed they had that all figured out. You know, there's many people today who think the same thing, don't they? They believe they've got God all figured out. They believe they got His Son all figured out. For many of them, they don't have anything to do with Him. Well, Jesus comes along, and He shows them, and He shows us, and He's still showing the world today, that they don't have everything figured out. And so He turns things inside out. So let's look at the first incident. Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 14. And He went out again by the seashore. And all the people, now He's still around in the Capernaum area, around the region of Lake Galilee. And it says here that all the people were coming to Him. And He was teaching them. He went out again by the seashore. Jesus was doing in his day, in first century, what a rabbi would do, what a teacher would do. They would go out in among the public, wherever it may be, and they would begin to teach. In other words, they would begin to preach. They would begin to speak. And as they taught and as they spoke, there would be those who would come along to follow them. They would become their disciples. Listen to them teach and preach. That's what Jesus is doing here. And we know He's teaching and He's preaching about the good news, the kingdom, the gospel. Now notice what happens. Jesus going out and about, He's teaching. All people are following Him. Now what Jesus is teaching, it's important to see here. What Jesus is teaching, when He's going about and teaching, do you think He's doing that with His eyes closed? Do you think He's doing that with that He's unaware of what's going on around Him? Of who's around Him? No. Jesus is teaching, He's going around teaching the good news with His eyes wide open. And He's observant. He's observing all those around Him. He sees. He observes. And then He acts. He doesn't just teach. He acts. He observes. And He acts. And now notice what He does here in verse 14. And as He passed by, now He's going by the lake shore by the Sea of Galilee. And as He passed by, you see how observant He is here. And as He passed by, He saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting in the tax booth. He's sitting in the booth where he collects taxes. Levi is, and his assistants. He probably has assistants around him as well. And notice what happens. Jesus says, and he said to him, Levi is sitting in the tax booth, and he said to him, follow me. Follow me. In other words, Jesus is saying, leave what you're doing and you come follow me. See, his next choice for a disciple to follow him. Look at this. This time is not a fisherman. Peter, Andrew, he's got four right now. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, they're what? They're fishermen. Levi's not. He's a tax collector. Levi. Now we know his surname, that what he went by was Matthew. Matthew Levi. Matthew is Aramaic. That's his Aramaic name, which means gift of God. So let us set the scene for a few minutes here. As he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting in the tax booth, and he said to him, follow me. And he got up and he followed him. Think about that. Let's set the scene. Think about that. He's a tax collector. Not a fisherman. He's a tax collector. How audacious of Jesus to look at a tax collector and say, follow me. A tax collector become one of his disciples? Are you kidding me? Jesus wasn't kidding. Tax collectors were one of the most despised of all in Jesus' day. You see this? One of the most despised of all in Jesus' day was a tax collector. These men, there were no women that were then in Jesus' day, it was the men. These men, they led a very lucrative life. They worked for the Roman government. And they weren't all Jews, the tax collectors, the publicans, tax collectors. But Matthew, Levi, son of Alphaeus, that's what he is. He's working for the Roman government. He's a tax collector. Now here's the thing. These tax collectors set the rates for what they collected. They did. Now the Roman government said, we want you to collect this much. But the tax collectors would set their rates themselves. The Hebrew word for publican or tax collector is mokis. And mokis means oppression and injustice. That's what the people call the tax collectors. Mokis, you're a mokis. You're unjust. You're an oppressor. And here's the thing. Why they didn't like him. You see, there was an undaunting number of different taxes that the Roman government had put upon people. You talk about taxes today. The Roman government had a poll tax. They had a tax on bridges. They had a tax if you use roads. They had a tax. Poll taxes, it was counting yourself. It's like the census, you know, how many people are in your family. They tax that. They had a tax if you used a boat in a harbor. They had a town tax, a tax on the town, which every citizen had to pay. They had income tax. If you grew grain, they had a tax on that. If you grew any kind of thing, fruit, grapes for wine, well, they taxed the grapes, they also taxed the wine. Do you believe that? Fish, you name it. The Romans taxed it. They were pikers compared to the IRS. People want to talk about the IRS. These tax collectors for the Roman government and for Herod, they were pikers. And they set their rates. William Barclay says that people never knew just how much they had to pay. The tax collectors extracted from them as much as they could possibly get, and they lined their own pockets with the surplus that remained after the demand of the law had been met. That's why they were pikers. Because they made well above what the tax was. And so they were hated worst of all because it showed the Jews especially hated them worst of all because it showed how dominated they were by the Romans and how oppressed they were. That's why they called them Mokis. In Hebrew. Well, you can imagine. Matthew Levi was a very hated man as a result of working with the Roman government. He was considered to be despicable, outcast. He couldn't even attend a synagogue. He wasn't allowed in. None of the tax collectors were. The Jews would not accept anything from a tax collector. J.W. Shepherd, in his book, The Christ of the Gospels, which we had to, Debbie and I had to read for the life of Christ in Bible college, he wrote this many years ago, but what he said was, the tax collector's money was considered tainted and defiled. Anyone who accepted it, a tax collector could not serve as a witness. The rabbis had no word of help. Get this. The rabbis had no word of help for the publican, the tax collector, because they expected him, the tax collector, the publican, by external conformity to the law, to be justified before God. You see how they thought they all had it figured out? Now, here's the thing. We read this. If you look back in Luke, especially Luke chapter 9, and we even see Matthew himself mentions himself, I think in Matthew 5. Matthew is the son of Alphaeus. Levi says the son of Alphaeus. Where do we hear about that again? Well, if you read in the list of the apostles, you'll see that Matthew Levi is the son of Alphaeus, and James is the son of Alphaeus too. They're brothers. James the son of Alphaeus, not the one brother of John, but James the son of Alphaeus. And Matthew, Levi, are brothers. Guess who else is a brother that also becomes an apostle? Thomas. Matthew and Thomas are linked together. What that tells us is, remember, Thomas was the twin? Who was his twin? Matthew, Levi, the tax collector, was his brother. They're brothers and they become apostles. Isn't that amazing? And here Jesus chooses one of those sons of Alphaeus, Matthew Levi, to be one of his disciples. He chooses the other two as well, sons of Alphaeus, James and John, Thomas. But Matthew's a tax collector. How audacious of Jesus, again, as I said, to do that. The audacity of the act. But here's the thing. Matthew Levi, the son of Alphaeus, gave up all to follow Christ. Now, we don't know about James and Thomas, what they gave up. But Matthew Levi, he had nowhere else to go. Remember Peter, Andrew, James, and John, when Jesus was crucified and he died, they could go back to fishing. What about Matthew? When he left and to follow Jesus, he had nowhere else to go. He gave up his livelihood for Jesus. He had no means to make another living at the time because he was a tax collector. And he gave it up. William Barclay says, because he answered the call, he gained a worldwide fame as the man who gave to men the record of the words of Jesus. That's why we have the book of Matthew. Now that leads us to the second incident, verses 15 through 17. And it happened that he was reclining. That's Jesus. And it happened that he was reclining in his house. Now, that's not the Lord's house. It's Matthew's house. Because you have to read Matthew to see the parallel passage there. If you look at Luke chapter 5, verses 29 through 30, that's a parallel passage. And they'll tell you that Jesus is in Matthew's house. And here's the thing. It happened that he was reclining in his house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples. For there were many of them, and they were following him. When the scribes of the Pharisees, and I know some of your translations says scribes and Pharisees, but the text actually says it's the scribes of the Pharisees. In other words, it's the Pharisees who were scribes. When the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they didn't say to Jesus, they said to his disciples, why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners? Why is he doing that? See, Jesus, if you read in the parallel passages in Matthew and in Luke, you see that Matthew invited Jesus to his house to dinner, to eat, to have a feast. And Matthew had left all to follow him, but he didn't just leave it there. Luke chapter 5, verses 29-30. Gives us a little more detail. And what he says here is this. And Levi gave a big reception for him in his house. And there was a great crowd of tax collectors and other people who were reclining with them. And the Pharisees and their scribes, actually the scribes of the Pharisees, grumbling at his disciples saying, why do you eat and drink with the tax collectors and sinners? How audacious that Jesus and his disciples would do that. But you see, you notice what Levi did? Matthew Levi invited his friends. Well, who would his friends be? He's a despicable outcast. He's an ostracized tax collector. So who would his friends be? But other tax collectors, who the Pharisees, the scribes of the Pharisees, considered, quote, sinners. Notice again, you see how they all had it figured out socially and culturally. They didn't consider themselves sinners. These people were sinners. So they say to his disciples, you think Jesus didn't hear that? Didn't hear him? Well, see in verse 17, he sure did. They told him, why are you eating with them? Don't you know they're sinners? These people, they're not like us. You shouldn't be eating with them. The cast-offs of society is what Jesus has surrounded himself with. It's what he's around. Not just fishermen now, but tax collectors and other sinners. And that's exactly who Matthew invites to his house to eat with Jesus. Now, these scribes of the Pharisees, they're not in the house. They're outside of the house. They wouldn't dare set foot in Matthew's house because they considered him a sinner. You see, relate to that to today. Who people want to invite into their home and in that? Someone you considered a sinner? No, no. And so they would stand outside the house and they asked his disciples. Maybe some of his disciples were coming in into the house to eat and said, why are you eating with them? That's what many people want to think today, isn't it? Isn't that right? How they want to segregate our society in that? What are you doing with that person? What are you talking with him for? He doesn't look like us. He's not like we are. What are you doing eating with that person? You understand that in our society and world, in the world, you know, Jesus is he is directly attacking that. And he's attacking that very thing today. They want to segregate society again. And Jesus is unsegregating things. He's turning things inside out. The men thought they had everything figured out. Now, this is the first mention of the Pharisees in Mark's gospel. Ralph Earl says they were a sect of separatists. There's about 6,000 of them in Jesus' day. The group began in the Maccabean period in the 2nd century before Christ. The Pharisees were trying to withstand the rising tide of Hellenism, that's Greek culture, in Palestine. And they stood strongly for close adherence to the law, including strict observance of all the ceremonial requirements. But as Ralph Earl said many years ago, but like all such groups, the sect became more and more legalistic in its emphasis. So they pose a pointed question to Jesus' disciples. Did you understand what sinner means in those days? The sinners were the Amharites. That's Aramaic. That's what sinner meant in Aramaic. And that's what the religious leaders and the scribes and the Pharisees called them. Let's say that again in Aramaic. The Amharites. You know what it means? It doesn't mean just sinners. It means people of the land. It means people not like us. Jesus hears that. And notice he responds. He's being sarcastic with them. Notice what he says. And hearing this, Jesus said to them, he's being sarcastic. Because remember again, they thought they had it all figured out. Notice what Jesus says. It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Here is what the religious leaders of the day said. This is Aramaic.
I'll put it up here for you.
Har. Aretz. Ham har aretz. The people of the land. That was a derogatory term. Because what the scribes and Pharisees were saying is that people who are not like us, people who haven't got it all figured out, because we've got it all figured out, we've got God all figured out, we even understand what the Messiah is, who he's supposed to be, and that. We got it all figured out. But they, the people of the land, the sinners, they do not. We're healthy. We're righteous. We've got it made. They don't. So what Jesus says here, brothers and sisters, is he is being sarcastic. He says, I did not come to call the righteous, but the ham har haritz, the people of the land. I came to call the sinner. He was being sarcastic with him and saying, you want to know why I'm eating and drinking with them? Because that's who I came for. You think you got it all figured out. You think you're already righteous. You don't need me. They need me. They need a physician. Because they know what you call them. And they identify with that. They see themselves as that. So yes, I came for them. You see, Jesus is saying the same thing today for people. Now here's the thing. Jesus is not condoning the character of those people he's eating with. Many people want to say, well, he's all right with everything that who they are and what they do. No, he's not. He's not condoning their character. He's not condoning how they act. He's not condoning how they live, those he's eating with. That's why he says what he does. He says, they need me. They're not healthy. Now he's talking about that spiritually so. And by this reply, as my late Bible college professor and mentor Enos Dowling said, by this reply, Jesus was making it clear that he was not among the publicans to share their sinful speech and conduct, but he was among them to win them to repentance. You see, that's how we have to be among people today. It's to understand that we are all sinners, right? We are the ham har haritz. The people of the land. That's why you read in Matthew chapter 9 what Matthew said is he quotes that Jesus said Hosea, he quoted Hosea chapter 6 verse 6, which says what? Go and learn what this means. That's what he tells them. Go and learn what this means. I demand what? Justice and mercy. Go, and he tells them, you go and learn what that means. Because what he's telling them, that the scribes and Pharisees who think they've got it all figured out, is that they don't know what justice and mercy means. Even though they think that they're righteous. You see again? The Pharisees thought they had it all figured out. And along comes Jesus, and he turns things inside out. But we'll know as we go along that the scribes and the Pharisees cannot stand what Jesus says. They don't like what he says. They didn't like what he said here. But it reminds me, and we'll pick up with the third and fourth incidents next week. But it reminds me in conclusion what Paul said, what we read in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15. It is a trustworthy statement, deserving full acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners. Among whom, Paul says, among whom I foremost of all. Before Paul came to Christ and became a Christian, what was he? He was one of those who thought he had it all figured out. He was a Pharisee. He says a Pharisee of Pharisees. And now notice what he says. He puts himself in that category of sinner. See, I like what B.W. Johnson said many years ago. What Jesus does here to them, and what he does to those even he's dining with and his disciples, and what he does for us today is this. Jesus plainly states his purpose. He states his work. He states that his concern would be among sinners. His call, his healing would be for them. And as Brother B.W. Johnson said years ago in the 19th century, if this offended the Pharisees, so be it. And see, brothers and sisters, that's how we need to think again. If what we believe about Jesus, if what we believe in Jesus, if it offends other people who think they've got it all figured out, then so be it. Let's stand. We're going to sing, Revive Us Again. That's what we need in us. See, that's what Jesus was talking about. He's talking about spiritual transformation. That's what he was telling them that they needed. You're unhealthy. He was telling them, I know, and these people understand. I know that they're unhealthy spiritually, and that's why I came to heal them. They don't have it all figured out. And so many today don't have it all figured out. But that's why we need revival again within us.